Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'll be reading articles published by the Geographic Society in January of 2025. I hope you enjoy the program. I'll begin with this article, What Causes Earthquakes? Thousands of tremblers occur every day. Here's what you need to know, where they usually take place, and how they're measured. There is no author cited for the article. Earthquakes, also called tremblers, can be so tremendously destructive that it's hard to imagine they occur by the thousands every day around the world, usually in the form of small tremors. Most are so small that humans can't feel them. But even smaller quakes can cause a stir. Most recently, an earthquake near York Harbor, Maine, with a preliminary magnitude of 3.8 on January 27, 2025. In the United States, East Coast earthquakes happen less frequently than those on the West Coast, but they can be felt over a broader area. This particular quake rattled parts of New England as far south as Boston and Rhode Island around 10:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here's what you need to know about where earthquakes typically occur, how earthquakes are measured, and the damage that the strongest earthquakes can cause. Where do most earthquakes occur? Some 80% of all the planet's earthquakes occur along the rim of the Pacific Ocean, called the Ring of Fire, because of the preponderance of volcanic activity there as well. Most earthquakes occur at fault zones, where tectonic plates, giant rock slabs that make up Earth's outer upper layer, collide or slide against each other. These impacts are usually gradual and unnoticeable on the surface. However, immense stress can build up between plates. When this stress is released quickly, it sends massive vibrations called seismic waves, often hundreds of miles through the rock and up to the surface. Other quakes can occur far from fault zones when plates are stretched or squeezed. Fault types. There are several different types of faults, including a normal dip-slip fault, reverse fault, and strike-slip fault. Here's what they mean. Strike-slip. When portions of the Earth's crust moves sideways, the result is a horizontal motion along a strike-slip fault. The most famous example is California's San Andreas Fault, which stretches some 600 miles from Southern California to north of San Francisco. The sideways motion of the fault's branches is caused by the Pacific Ocean's crustal plate moving to the northwest under North America's continental crust. The dip-slip. Up and down motions in earthquakes occur over so-called dip-slip faults, where the ground above the fault zone either drops, a normal fault, or is pushed up, a reverse fault. A normal fault occurs where the deeper part of the crust is pulling away from an overlying part. A reverse is, well, just the reverse. An example of a normal fault is the 240-mile-long Wasatch Fault underlying parts of Utah and Idaho, again caused by the Pacific Plate driving under western North America. One magnitude 7.0 quake along the fault, perhaps 550 years ago, dropped the ground on one side of the fault by 3 feet. The U.S. Geological Survey sees the fault as posing a risk of more magnitude 7.0 earthquakes. Oblique. Faults that combine sideways with up and down motions are called oblique by seismologists. The Santa Clara Valley, south of San Francisco, holds a fault prone to oblique motions, for example, seen in a 1999 quake. Earthquake magnitude ratings. Scientists assign a magnitude rating to earthquakes based on the strength and duration of their seismic waves. A quake measuring 3 to 4.9 is considered minor or light. 5 to 6.9 is moderate to strong. 7.7 to 7.9 is major. And 8 or more is great. Earthquakes are always followed by aftershocks, which are smaller quakes that strike after the main quake and can continue for weeks or even up to years in some cases. According to the USGS, some earthquakes also have foreshocks, or smaller quakes that precede a larger earthquake. The strongest earthquake ever recorded was a magnitude 9.5 quake that struck southern Chile in 1960. The Valdivia earthquake, named for the city that suffered the most damage, killed about 1,655 people and left another 2 million homeless. It also triggered a tsunami that spread across the Pacific and flooded coastlines in Japan, Hawaii, and New Zealand. Earthquake damage. On average, a magnitude 8 quake strikes somewhere every year, and some 10,000 people die in earthquakes annually. Collapsing buildings claim by far the majority of lives, but the destruction is often compounded by mudslides, fires, floods, or tsunamis. Smaller tremblers that usually occur in the days following a large earthquake can complicate rescue efforts and cause further death and destruction. Loss of life can be avoided through emergency planning, education, and the construction of buildings that sway rather than break under the stress of an earthquake. And that completes the article. The title was, What Causes Earthquakes? And there was no author cited. This article is titled, Step Inside the Factory Where the NFL's Footballs Are Made. Few have seen inside Wilson's facility, where dozens of expert craftspeople meticulously put together a product whose design hasn't changed for about a century. It's written by Terry Ward. What's more American than cheering as your football team sends a long bomb tightly spiraling toward its end zone target? It's a tradition that stretches back to the late 19th century. While today's pigskin is no longer made with the pig's bladder of football's late 1800s origins, all pro and collegiate footballs are now constructed from cowhide leather with synthetic rubber interiors, the shape and dimension of the NFL football have remained the same for more than 100 years. That the design from a century ago still perfectly suits the needs of today's sport is a kind of historical accident, says Dr. Rabindra Mata, former chief of the Experimental Aerophysics Branch at NASA Ames Research Center. Compared to a baseball, a football is a more aerodynamic shape by design. Footballs are made from four different panels of leather, leaf-shaped and tapered at both ends, which are sewn together inside out. Next, the leather is steamed so that it becomes soft enough to turn right side out. An air bladder is then inserted, and the football is laced together by hand. A football's shape is not exactly a ball in the spherical sense of the word, but a prolate spheroid, oblong with pointed ends that make it easier to grip. This shape and the way air flows around it helps the football to travel great distances. Characteristic of the football's surface, including the pebbling of the leather, the stitching of the panels, and the laces themselves, also allow airflow to stay attached longer and minimize drag compared to something spherical like a baseball. Picture a baseball traveling right with air traveling past, moving left. This would be what's called laminar flow, where air travels in a regular, smooth path. In a controlled environment, like a wind tunnel, the airflow would go straight left until it meets the ball, where it bends around until it reaches the far side of the ball. This point is called the apex. Then the air returns to traveling straight left, past the ball, without touching that far side of the ball. When this happens, there's a pressure difference between the front and the back of the sphere, which results in drag, the force that slows the ball down as it's flying through the air. Golf ball manufacturers tackle this on spherical golf balls by dimpling the ball's surface to keep airflow stay attached to help airflow stay attached longer, reducing drag, thereby letting the ball fly farther. The thin layer of air on the ball's surface is called a boundary layer, and a turbulent boundary layer creates turbulent flow, where a football's design shines. Air meeting a football with its textured surface and curved shape would flow around the ball, staying attached longer to its surface than it can on a baseball's. If the air is flowing left and the ball is moving right, the air will move up, left, and down along the football's bowed surface. While the air may not hug a football's curves all the way across, airflow does remain attached past its apex, resulting in a minimal wake and less drag. On a baseball, the air only makes a connection on half the ball, creating more of a wake and drag. Drag can be challenging to predict, particularly in odd-shaped objects like a football, said Annette Pico-Hosoi. Papalardo, professor of mechanical engineering at MIT. Drag depends on the shape of the wake, which in a football can vary depending on such factors as its orientation through the air, the velocity at which it's thrown, and surface roughness. Density of the surrounding air, a function of air temperature, also affects the boundary layer of a football and, in turn, its aerodynamics. Warm air is less dense than cold air. If the air is less dense, there is less drag, so footballs may fly further on warmer days, she explained, adding that the phenomenon has been well documented in baseball, which clocks more home runs during hot and humid weather than the contrary. A tight spiral throw, wobbling not at all, is indeed a thing of beauty, no matter the weather around it. The axis of the spin is aligned with the direction the ball will go, said Mata, likening it to the way a bullet flies. That's what the quarterbacks are really good at doing. And that completes the article. The title was Step Inside the Factory Where the NFL's Footballs Are Made by Terry Ward. Here's a health-related article titled, It's Not Your Lifespan You Need to Worry About. It's your health span. Unlocking the secrets for living more years disease-free is increasingly the target for longevity researchers. By Dinah Fine Marone. We're living much longer than our ancestors, but is that always a good thing? More of us are also spending a greater portion of our lives, sometimes over a decade, saddled with physical and mental health problems that make it challenging to accomplish the tasks of daily life. To make sure we're getting the most out of our entire lifespan, biologists and longevity researchers are focusing more and more on ways to boost our number of disease-free and active years. This idea is formally known as health span. Although it first appeared in medical journals more than 30 years ago, the concept has become increasingly mainstream among clinicians and patients alike, and its definition has broadened to stress adding more quality time to our later years, when certain health conditions could severely impede routine activities. Treated hypertension, for example, wouldn't significantly affect your health span, but a stroke or dementia would, says Harvard Medical School physician-scientist Sharon Inouye, who studies aging issues. The targets of researchers like Inouye are numerous, understanding the underlying mechanisms of aging, working to identify health-promoting genes, and zeroing in on steps to take in our daily lives to improve health span. But the overall data show a fairly simple conclusion. It is absolutely possible to live healthier even as we live longer. Just look at the centenarians that researcher Nair Bizzali works with at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. In academic parlance, his healthy study participants have what's called compression of morbidity. They're sick for a very small portion of their lives. They don't just live longer, they live much healthier, says Barzilai. They got diseases 50 years after their friends and 30 years after their children's friends. Some centenarians thrive through sheer good luck. They were lucky born with envy-worthy genetics. But pinpointing which of these genes are linked to age-related disorders could lead to drugs that mimic their effects for people who weren't as lucky in the genetic lottery. Barzilai's research has concentrated on the genes that modulate our good cholesterol to help us stay healthier in a variety of ways. His study participants are much more likely to have a specific variant of the cholesterol-controlling CETP gene. Those patients tend to live longer, with better brain function, he says. Emulating that gene's effects is now a target of ongoing research. With such drugs in our arsenal, in the future, Barzilai says, humans can and will improve their health span, particularly if they follow current recommendations for modifying diet, exercise, and social interactions. Overall, the most cutting-edge developments when it comes to health span depend on your perspective, says Inouye, who also directs the Aging Brain Center at the Harvard-affiliated nonprofit Hebrew Senior Life. If you talk with a longevity researcher, they will wax eloquent on the latest drugs being studied to enhance longevity, mostly in non-human models or animals at this stage, she says. But to her, the most important work in health span focuses on prevention. That includes, she says, eating a diet in fruits and vegetables and low in carbs, avoiding tobacco and excess alcohol, and keeping mentally active and socially engaged with activities like volunteering and regular aerobic and strength exercise. Recent research published in JAMA, Internal Medicine, where Inoue serves as editor-in-chief, shows that diet, exercise, brain games, and other steps can significantly help preserve brain health. Barzilai agrees, right now, without taking any drugs, we can basically maximize our exercise, our nutrition, our sleep, and our social connectivity, he says. These are the four things that anybody who wants to can do. Good sleep is essential, even if it's something you need to continually work on, advises longevity researcher Matt Kaberline of the University of Washington and CEO of Seattle-based OptiSpan, a biotech company that specializes in identifying health span improvements. Getting less than 7 hours a night as an adult increases the risk of developing numerous disorders, including type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, poor mental health, and even early death, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The broad strokes of a healthy diet are well documented, but different strategies work for different people, Kaberline adds. Whether it's a Mediterranean diet, which is high in fruits, veggies, and whole grains, or approaches such as intermittent fasting, or a low-carb, high-fat, ketogenic diet, he says, there should always be a focus on what feels right for you. Kaberline argues that a lot of progress in health span could be made by better monitoring of baseline health data, such as vitamin, hormone, and blood sugar levels. Asking your doctors to measure those indicators in your 30s and 40s could inform what actions to take later in life and let you know if urgent interventions are needed, though Kaberline notes that often such testing isn't covered by health insurance in the United States. At the same time, simply popping a daily multivitamin to stave off or address unknown vitamin deficiencies is not a good idea, he cautions, since it doesn't allow people to know if they truly have deficiencies. And if they do, multivitamins may not have the appropriate level of supplements to treat an individual's specific need. The key pillar of connecting with other people to expand your health span sounds easy, but it's something many tend to neglect. This can cause issues over time because people's friend circles naturally tend to shrink as they age. Even if you routinely interact with at least one person you live with, like a spouse, other social relationships and experiences remain important in old age because they can offset loneliness and keep you mentally sharp. For some, that may require working on yourself first. If you struggle with interpersonal relationships, Kaberline says, you can focus on inner peace and wellness, such as meditation and mindfulness practices. But you should still try to make friends, because the benefits often compound in other healthy ways once you get started. Joining a group focused on an activity you already enjoy, walking, for instance, can make you healthier, according to the National Institute on Aging. Unsurprisingly, the benefits are myriad for mental and physical health, and may include lowering risk of dementia, heart disease, and stroke. Being out in the world, even if it's past walking a dog, has also been shown to provide exercise and boost your overall happiness. Helping in the community, tutoring, or other meaningful pursuits that keep our brains active and involve social interactions can be personally fulfilling, and they're linked to improved memory and reduced stress. It turns out that the secret to living a long, healthy life is also the secret to living a good one. That completes this article. It's not your lifespan you need to worry about. It's your health span, by Dinah Fine Marone. And that completes the program for today. This has been the National Geographic Society magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader today. The articles I've read were all published in January of 2025. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with its premium programming offered on a 24/7 basis. And if you forgot a program that you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast and audio info, and then click on Demand Podcasts. You'll see a list of articles available to you. Hopefully, you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.